Shalom, Havarim. Hello, friends. I had to giggle just a little bit whenever Irvin came up here because, you know, it's not every Sunday that we have the executive director of our denomination here. But when we do, we make sure he's surrounded by toilet paper. So, I took a couple pictures. Once there was a pastor who was known for having really dry and long sermons. They just really drug on and on and on. Don't say amen. You don't know what that's like. And this pastor was really off his game one Sunday. It was a very terrible sermon. And he finished up the message. He went and stood by the door and greeted people as they left the building, just as he often does. But nobody said anything to him. Not even the benign, not even the thanks for the message, pastor. Thanks for all your work. You know, that's code for it. It was a bad message, but I know you put time into it. Nothing was said until towards the very end, a young man was walking out. And he said, "Pastor, your sermon today reminded me of God's peace and God's love." Now the pastor had never heard that before, and he was moved, almost moved to tears. And he said to this young man, he said, "Really? Now tell me, what was it about my message that made you think of God's peace and God's love?" And this young man said, "Well, pastor, your sermon was like God's peace because it passed all understanding. And it was like God's love because it endured forever." Speaking of enduring forever, we are in week 4 of a 5-part sermon series on the Beatitudes. How do you like that transition? Week 4 of 5. So far, we have looked at how God blesses us. God is on our side when we're at the end of our rope. When we humble ourselves, when we are meek, when we don't seek to inflict our way upon other people through force, God is on our side. When we are thirsting and hungering, when we know deep down inside that things just aren't right, God is on our side. And next week we will conclude this sermon by looking at persecution. Now, come on now. Hold on. Control yourselves. We Mennonites, we know a few things about persecution, right? You're excited to get there. But today's Beatitudes, we're looking at two of them again, are something that's very, very familiar to us as Mennonites as well. So read with me these two Beatitudes in unison. "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God." So every week when we've looked at one of these or two of these Beatitudes, I have had to stop and say, what does that even mean? I mean, what does it mean to be meek? What does it mean to be merciful? And we stopped and slowed down and really looked at these words. And sometimes I found that it's more helpful to look at what the opposite of that word is. So when I look at this phrase here, "blessed are the pure in heart," I'm not exactly sure that I know what that means, but I know what the opposite of that is. And I know what the opposite of being pure in heart is because I own a mirror. That means I am opposite of pure of heart sometimes. And especially when I think about my lack of purity in heart, I think of my sense of humor. This week, I came across a website called 11foot8.com. Are you familiar with this one? There, I'm not the only sick person in the room. 11foot8.com. There is a gentleman just outside of Boston, and he has mounted multiple cameras on the side of his house. He lives next to a bridge that has a low clearance. Anybody want to guess what the clearance is? 11 foot 8 inches. For a while now, he has been just running these cameras on the side of his house, and he captures videos of trucks and trailers, semis, U-Hauls, running into this bridge. And in a competition between a U-Haul and a trailer, a U-Haul and a bridge, the bridge wins every time. So I've been watching these videos, and I thought for this morning, I'm going to show you one. You say you wanted that U-Haul in a convertible? We can do that for you. And I should tell you that this bridge is affectionately called the can opener. Just from a few months ago. Oh, it's going to be the bus, right? No. Oh. And I know what you're thinking. If only they had a reverse angle. They do. That was like rec 116 on this website. So if you're finding yourself bored in the middle of this message, 11foot8.com. No, don't go there now. No, because I'm not the only one that is aware of this website, because some of you are out there and you're smiling right now, I realize that I'm not the only one who is not pure at heart. Some of you know German. This is the phrase Schadenfreude. You get you get joy from other people's pain. So that is the opposite of pure at heart. All right, it's one of those days. Everybody got sugar. It's not a good combination. This is the Schadenfreude. This is the opposite of pure in heart. But seriously, when I read these Beatitudes, I'm reading through them, and I'm expecting that Jesus is going to go into more detail. You know, he says things like, blessed are the meek. And I'm like, all right, here it comes. Jesus is going to tell us a parable. I bet you there's a prostitute involved. There's probably a tax collector, maybe a Pharisee. Come on, Jesus, tell us. No. What? He just goes to the next one. Blessed are the pure in spirit. Blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are... Like, it's just popcorn all over the place. My preaching professor is right here. That's not a good way to start a sermon, is it? But wait a second. Think about this. This is an entire sermon. It is the Sermon on the Mount. So I started looking at this a little more in depth, more closely, and I realized that this does seem to follow a traditional preaching pattern. And I'm going to clue you all in on a little secret here. This is how about every sermon is written. These are the three components. First, you start by, you tell them what you are going to tell them. Next, you tell them. And third, you tell them what you told them. All right? I know, I give away all the secrets, sermon. This is every sermon you've ever heard. Tell them what you're going to tell them. That is what we call the introduction. Then you tell them. You go into details. What does that look like? And then you tell them what you told them. And I realize that Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, it does follow this pattern in a number of ways. At least for these two Beatitudes, Jesus starts by saying them. Blessed are those who are pure in heart. Blessed are the peacemakers. And then later on, he goes into more detail. And then at the end, he brings it back and he closes with a summary statement. And I've said this summary statement a number of times. This seems to make so much sense. Do unto others as you would have them do to you. So what I want to do is look further into the Sermon on the Mount to see how Jesus gives examples, how he builds upon these teachings to tell us what it looks like to be pure in heart. So Matthew chapter 5, this is where we find the Beatitudes, the first 12 verses. And later on in that chapter, we find something called the antitheses of Jesus. Everybody say antitheses. All right, the antitheses are simply the teachings that correct something that was said before. This is the teachings that follow this pattern, where you find, you have heard it said, but I say unto you. You have heard it said, do not kill. But I say unto you, do not even get angry. You have heard it said, do not commit adultery. But I say unto you, do not even lust. You have heard it said, don't break an oath. I say, don't even take an oath. Now, Jesus isn't saying that these things are okay. Now it's okay. Go ahead and commit murder. Now it's okay. Go ahead and commit adultery. No, he's making it more difficult. He's taking these teachings from the Hebrew Bible that regulate the outward appearance of a person, the way people interact with one another. And he's saying, these are important teachings, but let's get down to the heart of it. What is the cause of murder? What is the cause of adultery? He says, if we get to the root of these things, we can take care of the externals as well. So getting to the heart of it, he's calling us to have what you might call a pure heart. So if we go further into Matthew's gospel, Jesus has these woes. There's six antitheses and seven woes. And the woes are usually directed towards the scribes and the Pharisees. And the Pharisees, we know these folks, they are upstanding individuals. They are highly pious, respected religious people. But Jesus has some strong words for these Pharisees. And he says to them things like, "Woe to you, Pharisees, because you are like a cup or a dish. And on the outside, you're all cleaned up. You look nice and lovely. But on the inside, you're growing mold. You're dirty. I mean, on the outside, you look good, but inside, that's going to poison you if you take a drink of that." And he goes on and says, "You're kind of like a tomb, a burial plot that's just been painted. You're freshly painted. You look nice. You're shiny. You've got that clear gleam, white. It's a glossy finish. But inside, you're filled with rotting flesh and deteriorating bones." Now, Jesus wasn't critiquing the way these Pharisees lived. They lived pious lives. They followed the law. But they did so for the wrong reasons. Jesus is calling them and us to be pure of heart, to start on the inside so that inside change may emanate and change the way we interact with one another. So that's my understanding of what it means to be pure of heart. But what about this next one, this peacemaker thing? We've heard this before, right? This is a Mennonite church. You know we're called to be peacemakers. But where else have you heard this phrase? This, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God." This is something that many different people adopt as their kind of their MO, their modus operandi, their calling card. And it's people that have vastly different understandings of what it means to be a peacemaker. I think this one, more than any other, we need to go further into the Sermon on the Mount to see what Jesus has to say. Look at his further commentary to understand what it means to be a peacemaker. Because whenever I think about people that use this phrase, I think, first of all, the police officers. This is a police badge, a ceremonial badge that simply says, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God." I've seen this in the military. Here's a person holding the red, white, and blue, a soldier wearing a uniform with the text here, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called children of God." Every peace and justice church, every individual involved with reconciliation kind of work, they adopt this as their passage. "Blessed are the peacemakers." Now, further to get a further understanding of how diverse our interpretation of this passage is, all we need to do is look at contemporary, not contemporary to us music, but contemporary perhaps to my grandfather. I believe it was both Johnny Cash and Waylon Jennings wrote a song, or they sang a song called "The Devil's Right Hand." You know this one? "The Devil's Right Hand." What is that? That is a Colt 45. You want to sing the song with me? Colt 45. It's called a peacemaker. So we have a vast difference in our understanding of what it means to be a peacemaker. Now, I will be the first to admit that we in the Mennonite church have not always got this right. And I'm not even convinced that we have it right yet to this point. Because so often in our history, we have been the quiet in the land. We have refused to go into war. We have refused to defend ourselves if somebody attacks us. And you know what? I think that's good. It's good to be people of like that nature, but is that really being a peacemaker? Are you making peace if you simply withdraw? I don't think that's being a peacemaker. It might at best be a peacekeeper, but you're not being a peacemaker. And I've told this story a couple times, and I apologize for those of you who are hearing it for the second or maybe the third time. But I'm reminded of a time when I was, let's say it was about 5 years ago. 5 years ago, I was a much younger man, more spry and full of life at that point. my son Paxton, he just turned 7 years old now, so he would have been 2. Hadley, our daughter, was just born. And I remember very clearly a nice spring day. I went with Paxton to the park. We live about a block and a half from Gypsy Hill Park. And he was a little fella, so we probably put him in the umbrella stroller, rolled him there. We went to the duck pond. He loved to feed the ducks at that point. I loved to feed the ducks. So we gathered around the duck pond. We were having a wonderful time on this beautiful spring day. So as Paxton and I are sitting there, we notice there's a bench just to our side where a couple of young women are sitting. And these are young, high school age African-American women. And I noticed that there's some young men that are kind of acting goofy around them, okay? Guys, we tend to be goofy around women. That happens. Not only was it spring in the air, I think there was some love in the air. It seemed like they were flirting to me, but that just tells you how dense I am. Because these young men, they weren't flirting with these young women. I learned soon that they were taunting these women. They were calling them names. These were white young men and black young women. And these young men were calling these women words that I will never say. Even if I'm quoting somebody, I'm not going to repeat those words. And they were saying things like, you ain't nothing but a this, and you ain't nothing but a that. You just so stupid, and you're worthless, and you're a piece of trash. And they were saying all of these things to these women. And I had a problem with that. I'm here with my young boy in a park on a beautiful day, enjoying God's beautiful creation. And this ugliness is going on. This is anything but peaceful. So what should I do? I'm going to run in there and I'm going to say something, at least about their grammar, because ain't a word and I ain't going to say it anymore. I'm going to do something about that. Or I'm going to stand in and puff myself up. You know, 5 years ago, I was 5 years younger. And no, I'm not going to fight somebody. I'm not going to hurt somebody. But I am 6 foot tall, 200 pounds. They're little high schoolers. They're scraggly little things. No offense to high schoolers. But I could at least intimidate them, even if I'm not going to hurt them. So I have all of these options of things that I could do to be a peacemaker. And what do? I put my son in the stroller. I turn away and leave that situation. Blessed are the peacemakers. Blessed are the peacemakers. I was not a peacemaker in that situation. There was a situation where there was no peace. I had a chance to create peace, and I chose the easy way out. And 5 years later, I still look back on this time as probably one of the lowest points in my Christian walk, one of my biggest failures, and I've had many failures. This was clearly one of them. Now, it could be that I just didn't want to expose my young son to that ugliness, to those words. I don't know why I chose to leave that day, but I know that I did. So now here we are several years later, and I continue to ask myself the question, what would Jesus do? So Jesus says, blessed are the peacemakers. He leaves it there. People interpret that differently. But what does he say about making peace? Well, at the end of chapter 5, in those antitheses, he says something very clear about being a peacemaker. He says, but I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be children of your Father in heaven. If I could do that whole scene over again, the first thing that we need to do is that Jesus says, in those midst of times where people are persecuting you or when there's ugliness or hatred, you are still to love those people. And the first thing that I should do is not run in there with my fists blazing or guns out or anything like that. No, my first step is to look at those individuals who are persecuting the others and look at them with love. Because if I'm talking 16, 17-year-old boys, and you know what? They did not learn those words in isolation. They did not learn them in a vacuum. They are victims. They learn those words and that terrible approach to other human beings from parents, from loved ones, from their community, from television. So the first thing to do is say, these two are victims, not just the African-American women, but the young white boys as well. And when I do that, I realize I need to love both groups because both have been hurt. Not only are they hurting these folks, they have been hurt. And they're just passing on that hurt. So to go in there with my guns a-blazing or fists a-flying, that would not help anything. So I thought, what would Jesus do? And Jesus is always sitting down with the marginalized and the persecuted people, spending time with those who have been hurt by society. So as those women are there being taunted, I thought, what if rather than pushing my stroller away, I turned to them? And what if I went to them and started just talking? And I said, hi. You know, they're being taunted. And in the midst of that, hi, I'm Kevin. I've seen you around before, haven't I? This is my son, Paxton. We just live right up the road. Are you from around here? Oh, that makes us neighbors. And in doing that, I humanized them. You know, no longer are they that N-word. No, and now I know their name. Now I can call them their name. I've called them neighbor. But don't stop there. Then you go to the boys who have been picking on them and say, hi, I'm Kevin. It's nice to meet you. I'm from just up the road. This is my son Paxton. Are you local too? Oh, it's good to know that we are neighbors. So in doing that, I put everybody on the same level plane. Now, I don't know if that would have solved the problem. I'm sure it wouldn't have solved the problem. But you know what? That's an effort. I stepped into the situation in an effort to make peace. Blessed are the peacemakers, not just the peacekeepers. So in each one of these Beatitudes, Jesus gives some sort of a reward for people, right? Have you noticed that? If you are meek, you get the world. If you are at the end of your rope, if you're poor in spirit, I think you inherit the kingdom of God. Have you noticed what the peacemakers get? They get a title, an honorary title. The peacemakers are called the children of God. Now, this is a metaphor we find time and time throughout the Bible, and it's kind of confusing because not everywhere is this metaphor used in the same way. But I want to share with you a way to understand this metaphor that has been helpful for me. A few weeks ago, I shared a picture of my family on Facebook. This was a picture taken about last year, and we used it as our Christmas card. You know, it's that one time when actually everybody in our family is looking at the camera instead of like, oh, there's a bird. And we take it inside. Look, a bird. No. We got this one picture, and it turned out pretty well. I post this picture online, and of course, you know, I'm looking for people to click it and say, I like this one. That's why you do that. But people are commenting and saying things like, oh, your kids are such a good combination of the two of you. I'm like, should that really surprise you? But yes, they are a good combination of the two of us. I mean, I look at my son, and he's got my goofy grin, less a few teeth, and he's got my dimples, and Hadley and Paxton, they both have their mother's big brown eyes. And it's not just their physical appearance, they act like us too. Paxton is a very caring and compassionate individual. Hadley is wild and untamed, and I'm not sure where that comes from. I think that skips a generation. No, it's clear when you see these children, well, they're my children. They're our children. They look like us. They talk like us. There's really not much question to it. So when Jesus says, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God, I think he's saying that when you are a peacemaker, you look like God. And it's not just this passage. He says it there in the antitheses as well. For when you pray for those who are persecuting you, when you love even your enemies, then you will be the children of God. When you do these things that God does, when you love people regardless of if they're enemy or friend, if they persecute you or not, when you love indiscriminately like that, you look like God. When you think of Jesus on the cross, as he hung there, one of the last things he says to the people who are there beating him and persecuting him and killing him, he says, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. When we seek the goodness of those around us, when we seek peace, when we seek shalom, we look like God. It is my prayer that we will all look a little more like God this week. Amen.